There's some sort of common link, and it's nice ways to get together. But it's a shim next Monday. We'll have a shiur as well. We'll get the details out to you also, which will bring the Oyam together. There are limud. It's important to do these things, to feel part of something. Anybody who wants to complain to Holy Bagels because they've stopped doing outside catering, that's why we don't get Holy Bagel taxes anymore like we used to, is welcome to. David Freeland has to run around and put everything together by himself now, so it's not exactly the way it would be if we had a professional caterer doing it. So if anybody wants to complain to Holy Bagels and tell them that the breakfast here is not the same anymore because of their policy decisions, you're welcome to, and you can mention my name. Hanukkah is a massive subject, and there's an enormous amount of talk about it, and there's a lot of confusion, and there's hardly any clarity about it. I want to try and just focus our attention on one, perhaps why it's like that, and also try and just maybe take out one nakuda that I think is very relevant and that we can take with us. And to cover Hanukkah one question of the Beis Yosef has elicited how many hundreds of answers. And we're still not clear exactly why we celebrate Hanukkah for 8 days, even after all the Tirutzim on the Beis Yosef Kasher. Really, it should only be for 7 days. Why do we even keep it for 8 days? And every cleric is not really, that's why there's so many, I think. No one really hits the nail on the head. We're not even sure we'll be doing Yalla Maisa. But every year a person has to go a bit deeper, try and understand a bit more, and try and internalize a bit more. The parshas that we read over this Tekufa, leading up to Chanukah, over Chanukah, have a theme in them, one aspect of them has a theme in them, which I think is very relevant to Chanukah. If we look at the birth of Mashiach, it starts with the Maisa of Yehuda and Tamar, which is not the most refined way to start building Mashiach, the future king of the Jewish people, the spiritual leader, Mashiach, who's going to be the most refined, fully built, fully done, dynamized, fully affected human being that's ever going to have lived. Greater than Shlomo HaMelech in wisdom, just short of Moshe Rabbein in Nevuah. His life starts off in what seems to be a very sordid, very difficult to understand event, and it continues through the whole series. David HaMelech's life and his whole heritage with Boaz and Ruth, and the whole Maisa seems to be very, very unbecoming and unfitting for the future leader of the Jewish people. Yosef, concept of Mashiach ben Yosef, Yosef himself, leader of Klal Yisrael, 22 years in Mitzrayim. He ends up marrying Dina's daughter from Shechem. Very strange events taking place here, which are supposed to produce the purest people that are ever going to have lived. Chazal give a very simple moshul to explain what's going on here, and I think this is very relevant to Chanukah as well. If a person has a very, very valuable treasure, very, very priceless treasure that he needs to move from one place to another, so if he'll hire an armored car, he'll get Brinks, you know, with 26 black jeeps on either side with flashing sirens and armed guards, someone's going to work out that there's something very precious being moved here. And they may decide to come and capture it. However well guarded it is, you can never protect it from anything. And someone will go after it. So what does a clever person do? He hires one of these beef trucks, you know, these trucks that suck up, excuse my language, eating breakfast. He takes one of these beef trucks and he puts a treasure in the middle of the beef, in the middle of all the waste matter, and he drives the truck to where he needs to go. Which Ganav's going to think that there's anything valuable driving around there? So that's the marshal Chazal used, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's moving something very precious here through human history. He's moving the fulfillment of the creation through human history. And the Koichas Atuma would use any opportunity to get hold of it and acquire it and damage it. So Hashem hides it in places where the Yetzer Hara wouldn't think to look. Which is maybe why they got me to speak here today. And no one else. Because the Yetzer Hara walks past and he says, you know what, I'm into Bittul Torah. He's speaking, but said, I'm going back to bed. He says you should start with a joke so that the Yetzer Hara doesn't think there's anything serious going on. So I was Yetzi the joke, Baruch. Don't get you upset. That's how you move things that are kadosh and tor. You move them in a way that the Yetzirah doesn't see them, doesn't notice them, because they're so seemingly not important. If one looks at the two Derabbanan Chags we have, Purim and Chanukah, first of all, one observation is that they're still very relevant. It says Mitzrayim, when we left Mitzrayim, we're done with the Mitzrayim. Hashem says you'll never see them again, you're not going to have to deal with them again, you're not going to go live there anymore. You're finished with the Mitzrayim. I don't know if anybody has any sign today from the Mitzrayim. And yet, the Derabbanan Chagim we have, Chanukah and Purim, we're still very much involved with our enemies that we so-called won over them. If anybody thinks we finished with Amalek, I've got news for you. And if anybody thinks we finished with Greek, I've got bigger news for you. We don't seem to have actually won those wars. That's observation number one. Observation number two, we know that both Chanukah and Purim are very, very holy moments. I'm not going to go into Purim too long here, because it's not the time. But Purim, we know, Yom Kippur is Yom Kippurim. Arizal already points out that Yom Kippur is not on a higher level like Purim is. Purim's on a much higher level than Yom Kippur. Why it is like that, we'll discuss closer to Purim, remind me. Purim is the holiest day of the year, according to the Arizal. And yet, how do we clothe that day? In fasting, in kittles, in shul? No, it's complete bedlam. Bedlam, people are getting drunk, who knows what's going on. They're completely, completely shrouded in mystery that chag. Doesn't make any sense. You're celebrating the holiest day of the year. And look how we do it. Doesn't make sense. Chanukah, without going into all the details, many, many, many places we see that Chanukah is the generator, it's the engine room of a person's ruchness for the whole year. What a person can achieve on Chanukah in terms of learning and spiritual growth and aliyah and chinuch and chizuk and ischachas is not shaykh any other time of the year. Rav Dessler discusses this, and many of the Mefarshim discuss the enormity of the obligation to use Chanukah properly. And yet, lamaisa, I got calls today from Bochrim, I want to know, can I go back to Tifrach today, to Yeshiva Sagua Yom? When are you going back? Tuesday. Don't look shocked, Rebuliski, it's happening a lot. Yeshivas are closing, it's the long weekend, why not do it next week? You want to give the guys a break, give them a break, it's a very good thing, I think it's important. Do it next week, no, it's this week, Dafka. When do we light? I'm going into all the machlokesim, when do we light? When we don't light, but Lamaisi is, most of the kollelim close early to go light. What's going on here? The whole thing. And how do we celebrate Chanukah Lamaisa? So you light a candle, big deal. In the southern hemisphere, I don't know those of you who grew up in South Africa remember, you sort of like run off the beach quickly to get to, you know, to light quickly and get back to the beach again, because it's sort of, you know, it's summer now and everyone's on holiday, it's Chofesh HaGadol, and Chanukah sort of gets lost in the midst and over here as well. You light at 5 o'clock whenever you light, and that's it, it's over. What's there to do? So we have parties and we eat sukkaniyot and we do all sorts of stuff that seems to have no relevance, no shaykhs to what Chanukah is. And I think it could be the same thing. It could be that's why these parshas are there, to remind us, to us, that there's something very precious here and something very powerful, and it's hidden, because if it wouldn't be hidden, it would get completely captured, and therefore everyone has an obligation to utilize the time properly and not to get fooled by the mode of transport. Don't get fooled by the fact that there's a vehicle here to look deep and to try and understand what really is going on here. The Greeks are very hard to understand. On one hand, you see a people here of a intellectual sophistication, of a level of chokhmah. The Rambam says about Aristotle that he'd reached and mastered every area of chokhmah. Every area of chokhmah there was to be mastered, Aristotle had mastered. On the other hand, you see a pagan nation involved in every form of avodah zarah, every form of debauchery, every form of low-lifeness that you could ever imagine. There's an enormous stereo in the whole Greek philosophy, of the whole Greek thing. What did they want from us? What was bothering them so much with the Jewish people? They allowed every god in the world. Every nation had its gods. And the Greeks were very tolerant, by the way. They were very tolerant people. You've got your god, we've got our god. You can believe in what you believe in, we believe in what we believe in. Everything was fine. We used to have big debates, big philosophical debates, and discussing very hard things. And until they met us, suddenly they couldn't handle us. We rubbed the nerve there somewhere. What was it about us and about them that they couldn't stem? They couldn't work together. And Ada Yomazeh, we have this problem. On the one hand, there's an enormous pull to embrace the Greek approach to things. It's such a need. We recognize that it's very connected to Torah thinking, and we're not sure exactly why. One of the aspects that's brought down is Lashkicham Teirosecho. The Greeks want it to be Lashkicham Teirosecho. What's Lashkicham Teirosecho? Well, they wanted us to forget Torah. So what are they going to do? They were going to do memory erasion. What was Lashkicham? Forget Torah. Klavisol was going to forget Torah. Who's going to forget Torah? What was their modus operandi to get us to forget Torah? So it's all brought down from the Lakewood Mashgiach, Zatzal. Very interesting insight. The Greeks weren't that upset about Talisa learning Torah and being involved in their philosophy and their religion, just as they weren't upset with anybody else being involved in their religion and embracing their philosophical Disneylands and doing whatever they did. The Greeks had one problem with Jewish concepts, and that is that it's all embracing. If there's an infinite creator of the universe, so then that obligates some kind of attention. You can't, in the face of an infinite creator of the universe who wants a personal relationship with you, kind of be satisfied with throwing a spear further than the next guy. That's just, you can do that, and it's very healthy, and it's an important thing to do. It's very important to keep healthy and play sport. But that becomes a reason why you're living, to see who can run faster than the next guy in the face of an infinite creator. That just doesn't shtick. The Greeks can have a god, and they can have all the gods in the world, and they can have all the philosophy in the world, but the one thing they couldn't tolerate was there was a creator of the universe. Because if the creator of the universe, he has to be infinite. The Greeks tied it, Aristotle tied it, that the world was infinite and always existed, but God came later. Which is the problem with Shabbos, by the way, if you think about it. Shabbos, we testify to the fact that God created the world. God stopped creating the world. If he stopped, it means he must have started. You can't stop something that always was. The Greeks had a fundamental machlokas with the Jews on this nekuda. If there's an infinite creator of the universe who created the world, so that obligates you not just in the realms, in the forums of philosophy and religion, that machayes you in every aspect of your life. You can't divorce your spiritual life from your day-to-day existence. A Jew has a business dispute with his partner. What does he do? He wants to know what the halacha is. What do you mean? What do you care what the halacha is? What's it got to do with your spiritual existence? Business is business and religion is religion. What are you mixing the two together for? Oh, wait, what's going on here? What are you talking about? The way I lead my life is the way I lead my life. Religion is religion. What do the two have to do with each other? And of course, we all know that's exactly who we are. There's nothing about our lives that aren't connected and interwoven with our spiritual existences. We don't always practice it. We don't always manage to live up to that. That's because we have Yetzer Horas. That's because we have what's called Asol Sheva Issa, and the Shivas are almost, we're in Godless. We're not perfect. We're good. But we don't have an ideology, or we're not supposed to have an ideology, that allows you to get the best of both worlds. There are not two worlds. There's one world. There's a world where everything is integrated and everything flows out of the fact that you're living a spiritual Torah life. And for the Greeks, that was a complete enigma. They couldn't grasp it. They couldn't deal with it. And ad kere kach, they couldn't tolerate it. They had to destroy that completely. So if you want to be religious and you want to keep your Torah and you want to learn and you want to do your stuff, whatever, that's great with us, say the Greeks. Aval, not this nekuda. Lashkicham Teirosecho, the Mashgiach said, was to make sure that the Torah doesn't become part of your day-to-day existence. That they're not prepared to have. It was the early Maskilim actually chapped onto this. The early Maskilim said, you'd be a Jew at home and you'd be a mensch in the street. It was the beginnings of the whole reform movement. That's where it started. They didn't come out and just, you know, take off their garb and throw away their Judaism out the window. No, all they did was separate your spiritual life from what's called your real life. In other words, if you want to know whether this pot's kosher or not, so then you go to the rabbi, yeah? But how you spend your money or what you do with the rest of your day, what's it got to do with the rabbis? What's it got to do with religion and Torah? That's got nothing to do with it. That's how reform started. We're separating those two dynamics, and it carries on today. It continues all the way through today, and unfortunately sometimes it enters into our world as well. We learn Torah, and it's very fascinating, and it's very interesting, and it's very geschmack. You get an insight into a Rashi that you had never before. You see a Svara that you never saw before, and it's beautiful and it's delicious. But it changes you. It affects you. It does anything to you, or you carry on being the same person. You carry on being the same person. Or no, the Torah is live, it's organic, it grows. As I'm going through the Torah is going through me. Because I understood a ketzos today better, I'm actually a little bit nicer to the next door neighbor. I'm not as short-tempered as I am with my chavrusa. I'm able to listen a bit more, I'm able to tolerate a bit more. That's what's happening when I'm doing my learning. Or no? I learned the geshmak at Tosas, and wow, that geshmak, that is mamash, you have no idea how delicious it was, and there's nothing more delicious than that. There's nothing more delicious than understanding a piece of Torah today that you never understood yesterday. There's nothing in the world that creates that kind of pleasure. But what is that about? Is that about I had a nice spiritual moment now, I had a wonderful awakening, I had a wonderful insight, there was a wonderful shiur, there was a gevaldi kedrosha, there was an unbelievable vort, and I walk out the front door and it's over. Or no, that limud, that Torah that I'm touching, that I'm embracing, has some impact on me. It has some ability to change me. I'm a better person today because I learned that. The Greeks have no concept of what I'm talking about. I'm not even sure I know what I'm talking about. But the Greeks certainly couldn't tolerate that. What does the one thing have to do with the other? You know, what was one of the Greek philosophers said or whatever? Is a mathematician have to be a triangle? I caught one of the great philosophers doing some terrible things or whatever. They asked him, "What? I don't understand. You're teaching this and you're behaving like that." He said, "What, does a mathematician have to be a square? Just because I'm a philosopher and I'm preaching all these wonderful things, I mean, I have to behave like that." But us, yes, you have to behave like that. And when we're not behaving like that, because no one's perfect, we recognize that. We recognize that and we embrace the path of tshuva and we try and change and we try and improve. But to sit back and say that there's an aspect of my life that's not governed or somehow connected to the Torah that we received at Sana, that it has nothing to do with my relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's an anemic, that's total, that's Greek. That's Greek. And when you see it in the world today, whether it's wearing a yarmulke, it's wearing a shtamel, or whatever it's wearing a kapotu, when it has that aspect to it, you must know that's Greek. There's nothing to do with Judaism. Get the best of both worlds is not a Jewish concept. Not a Jewish concept at all. When I'm at work, I'm at work because the Torah demands me to be there. When I'm sitting and learning, it's because the Torah demands me to do that. When I'm tying my left lace before my right lace, it's because the Torah demands me to do that, no matter how insignificant that might seem to be. And I'll make a decision about whether I can do this business deal or not, whatever, then Hilchos Rivis and Hilchos Gedev and Hilchos Oinah becomes part of my questioning. I have an accountant and I have a lawyer and I have a rabbi. A businessman in Johannesburg once approached me. He says, "You know, I'm involved in a lot of overseas deals and whatever, and a lot of financial stuff going on, whatever. And I'm becoming frum and whatever. And I realize there's a whole bunch of Hilchos business that I never knew about. So I've got an accountant who I pay a retainer because whenever I need, whether it's 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever I need, I've got a question. I'm busy doing a deal in America. The guy's got to be online. He's got to be on call. So I pay the guy every month just to be on standby. And I have a lawyer for the same thing and a tax consultant. He says, but I need a rabbi like that as well. I suddenly realize I need a halachic authority that I can phone up whatever. So I put him in touch with somebody. I don't know exactly what happened, but that's what he wanted. He understood. No, he's becoming frum. He goes to shul night, puts on tefillin. He goes to the kiddush on Shabbos morning. He's doing all the things that you're supposed to do. And then he goes to work. And I've got a lawyer. I've got an accountant. What's it got to do with halacha? What's it got to do with anything? What's it got to do with my spiritual existence? No, he knows. He knows when he's at work. He has to be thinking about kiddush Hashem. He has to be thinking about what people think of him. He has to know how to behave. He has to know the thought. That's all part of that's monad that flows from what it means to be a spiritual person. And that's the Nisoyin. That's where the Greeks came to make that nituk, that break between what's called the philosophical, spiritual, religious world and the day-to-day practical world. You can be a behema ad asof, and you can still be considered a very spiritual person. For us, there's no ways you can do that. For us, those two just don't go together. They just don't work together. Practically, they tend to work together, as I said, because we're not perfect. We're human. But as an ideology, to say that's the lechatchila, that's Greek. That's Greek. There's no room in our lives, there's no room in any Jewish existence, that type of philosophy. And we have to be very careful of it. We see the Oron HaKodesh, Hanukkah will end on this maybe, unbelievable insight from the Berkovitz. The Oron HaKodesh was a piece of wood, mitzupah with gold. It was made from wood and it was surrounded by gold. What's this teaching us? Oron HaKodesh is Torah. Oron HaKodesh is the repository for Torah. What's this teaching us? So gold is beautiful. Gold is the most beautiful metal, precious. Not today, I don't know what's going on with the gold price, but it could be the gold's not so beautiful today, but gold is the most amazing thing. We make our jewelry from it, it's beautiful, it's shiny, it's refined, it's royal. Gold is royalty. Wood is wood, it's nice, it's plain, it's very, not the most precious commodity around or whatever. Why do we mix these two together? So I said like this. I can't say it as well as he says it, but I'll at least try and just get the words out and you can do what you want with them. He said, gold represents the external manifestation of a Talmud Chacham. Someone who's learning Torah, observing Torah, he has to be a melech. He has to be refined. He has to look sophisticated. He's got to look like royalty on the outside. No question. But gold doesn't change. It doesn't grow. It's not organic. It's just, that's where it is. It is what it is. Wood, on the inside, a Talmud Chacham has to be vibrant. He has to be alive. He has to be organic. He has to be growing. He has to be changing. The same way as a tree. A tree is something that nourishes itself on the environment around it, and it grows. And it changes. And it provides all sorts of benefits for the world in doing that. So he said that's what the Aron HaKodesh is coming to teach us. On the one hand, when a person learns Torah, if he's not becoming more refined and more sophisticated and becoming a better person outside, then for sure there's a problem. But that's not enough. On the inside, he has to be organic. He has to be growing. He has to be changing. He has to be nurturing himself from the environment and giving back to the environment, the same way as a tree does. And that's the remnant of the Aron HaKodesh. That's the remnant of the Torah. And that's something that Chanukah, that the Greeks couldn't tolerate, and that the Hashmonim went to war about. That Nakuda. You want to take everything that's precious to us. You want to take everything that means something to us, and you want to detach that from our Torah. That you can't do. You can't take the physical world and detach it from the spiritual world. Those two things have to be together and have to be in harmony together. And the Maaseh, this battle goes all the way back to Nimrod's fight with Avram. It's a whole share on its own. I'm not going to go into it now. But Nimrod didn't go after Shem Va'eva. Nimrod had no problem with Shem Va'eva, who was also talking God and also teaching God and also running a yeshiva. Didn't try and close that yeshiva down at all. Avram Avinu, Nimrod goes ballistic. He can't tolerate Avram Avinu, because Avram Avinu was the first one that taught this yesod. That the physical world and the spiritual world are the same world. They're not two different worlds. Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba are not two separate worlds. They're the same world. Esav was lo ma'amin b'shnei olamot. Esav, it says, didn't believe in two worlds. Of course he believed in two worlds. He knew there was Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. He chose Olam Hazeh over Olam Haba. The Pshat is, he didn't believe that those two worlds were one world. You can't take this world and not get the next world. What you're doing here affects your next world. It's the same thing. The buttons you push here are the next world. And that's what makes us Jewish, and that's what we went to war about. That was the war. And today, what do? We light a candle. There was nothing more they could do to get us to keep Hanukkah. What's the mitzvah of Hanukkah? Light a candle, that's all. Light a candle. There's nothing gashmis in the world that can represent Hanukkah. You have to do something spiritual. A candle is about the most spiritual thing you can do in the physical world. Short of smelling, smell is slightly higher. But a candle, it's a very, very spiritual thing. And that's how we remember Hanukkah. When we light a candle, that's what we're remembering. Remembering first of all that yes, we did win this battle. We did win this battle. Our lifestyle and our philosophy did conquer the Greeks, and that's why we're here today, and that's why we have what to fight for. But at the same time, it's to remind us, and that's why we put it by the door, by the window, stay outside. You stay outside, Mr. Greek. We don't want you in our house. We don't want you as part of our existence. Our existence has nothing to do with your existence. Yes, you're tolerant. Yes, you accept all religions. But this Nakuda of our life, you can't tolerate. And you'll never be able to tolerate it. But that's what we stand on, and that's what we fight for, and that's what we died for, and that's what the Hashmonim went to war over. Was this Nakuda. You can't tashkicham Torah Secha. It means when you walk out the door of the Beis Midrash, the Torah comes with you. Not one, because you say you don't need God in the Beis Midrash. You mean when you walk out the Beis Midrash. In shul, you don't need God. It's very easy to be frum in shul. But when you walk out the door and you're in business and there's deals going down and there's this happening, whatever, then it's very easy to forget the fact that this is also Kaddish. This is also holy. When I'm standing in the bank and I'm cashing a check, that's also Kaddish. I'm supporting my family. I'm going to work because I have to feed a family, whatever. That's also Kaddish. There's no secular and religious. A friend of mine once told me his child came home from school. He asked her, what did you study in secular today? She said, we don't have secular. We don't have secular studies. So what are you talking about? You didn't learn math? You didn't learn geography? She said, that's Torah. I don't think too many schools like that, but that's a good school. That's a very good school. It's all part of Hashem's existence, is the way it's supposed to be. That's what Einon Mevada means. It means there is nothing outside of Hashem's existence, and we live within that, and we harmonize those forces in the way we live our day-to-day existences. We should be zoiche to very soon, with the coming of Mashiach, to be able to see this realized, not just in our philosophies and our ideologies, but also in the way we conduct ourselves, in the way we live our lives, in the way we behave, that we should also be able to take the Torah we're learning and internalize it, and as a result of that, become the kind of people that are called for what we have to be.
Notice that people are healthy and nobody's eating.